You know, Deontay Johnson gets cut, and it leads the headlines in Cleveland. Shedeur Sanders becomes the third team quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. I wanted to send this to you guys. It was the second headline on ESPN.com. Number two. Two. Carlos Santana here, 11 years. We didn't get one question. Not one. One of the most legendary Guardians since 2000. Leave the 90s Indians out of it. Not one. Like, hey, wait, he's going to be waived. Can anybody? Nothing. I hope I'm wrong by the end of the day, but I got Mitch scouring because, you know, Mitch is going to freak out. He's going to be like, oh, Ken's going to go crazy if I can't find this. Mitch,
if you would use the term, it's interesting because, you know, sometimes we jumble words together. They lose their meaning or whatever. Legend. You think Carlos Santana is considered a legend?
I think there's younger people who love Carlos Santana.
I've never thought of him as a legendary figure.
Okay, but one of the great Guardians of this era. Okay, fine. If we're gonna, I don't want to sit here and mince words, but Deontay Johnson was here for a month, and his fall from grace has been something that's outrageous because we don't see that a lot except with Steelers wide receivers, and he was a Steelers wide receiver. But Deontay Johnson was here for a month, and it's a peppering of Deontay Johnson. Albert Breer was with Afternoon Drive yesterday. Now, Albert Breer's a football guy, and he had something to say about, you know, the whole Deontay Johnson deal.
Big part of it is whether or not you can trust him. You know what I mean? If you give him a spot on the team and he doesn't have a certain role, is he going to do all the right thing? That's important, you know? A lot of times with guys like him, like, you can keep him in line if they've got a real role, right? Like, if they're a starter, but if the guy like that's not a starter, are you better off keeping him in where maybe you're not sure you can trust him? Or are you better having a younger developmental player in that spot? You know, like, I think that's sort of what it comes down to when we're talking about those things. It's also, you know, like, part of it's a function of your special teams value and what was he bringing from a special teams standpoint. Because once you get down, you know, your fourth receiver, your fifth receiver, your sixth receiver, now you're talking about those guys having to contribute to the team in other ways, like outside just the offense.
Again, 40 seconds of Deontay Johnson commentary from Albert Breer. I can't get one thing on Carlos Santana. Not one. Like, that's part of what makes the NFL is that they blow everything out of proportion. Everything is a big deal. Third team quarterbacks for the Browns. Yes, his name is a big name. Is the second biggest headline on ESPN. I can't get one over there about one of the better Guardians of this era. One of the better Indian/Guardians of this era. It's just, I don't know. The whole Deontay Johnson thing, I agreed with Jonathan in the afternoon where he's like, man, I'm hearing a lot of people like kind of giving their sympathy to Deontay Johnson. He messed up his own career. Like, if he was a guy who never got off the mat because of injuries, it's just, man, this isn't going to work out. This sucks. Like, the Browns have had a couple of guys like that. Like, yeah, I could see the sympathy given. Like, this guy had it. And then he walked away from a couple of teams like mid-game, mid-season. Really asinine stuff. So I don't need to sit there and give him my sympathy.
Yeah, he's a cautionary tale. There's a bunch, especially at that position, wide receivers in the NFL that had a ton of talent. It's why when the Browns picked him up, I saw people immediately, it's always the same people, but the Browns fans on social media, whoa, this is a steal. And I'm like, you guys realize there's a career here that predated this day in which you were reacting to this. Like, it wasn't hard to find, you know, how many situations he's either sabotaged or whatever. And then he came in, and I think he had like a good week and a half. And people, I remember, because the conversations were all out there and people were calling us, this is going to be a big deal for Andrew Berry. And this is going to be a big deal for whoever wins the starting quarterback job. Like, to have a guy like this, it's capable of 70 catches. And I'm like, were you guys in a coma the last 5 years? Because guys like this can be tantalizing all the time. They just, when they're on their fifth stop, like, come on. Yeah. When does it ever turn around?
To me, it was just an indication of how desperate the wide receiver room is.
How bad the quarterback room is. Yeah.
No, I thought wide receiver, you're talking about Deontay Johnson? I thought it was just an indication how bad the wide receiver room is. Albert Breer did have something to note here. Do I want to play this for everybody, or are they going to get upset?
Got it in the queue.
I mean, we
got
to do it. So here's Albert Breer on the rookie QBs and another QB after the Pickett trade. Go ahead.
People have talked to me about this in very vague terms, so please take it that way. I think Watson's going to be cleared in October or November. Like, I think it's going to be at some point in that, like, general time range. So you're talking about, like, middle of the season somewhere. He's going to be available, and then, you know, you're probably going to come to a point where you got to put him on your 53-man roster. That means walking away from a player. Is that player one of the quarterbacks? We'll see. Trading Pickett now sort of gets you ahead of that problem a little bit, like, where there's just no way you're going to carry five quarterbacks on your roster. So now your whole, you know, four quarterback conundrum is solved for now and probably solved for later, because you did feel comfortable and you had accounted for the idea that you were going to have four quarterbacks to begin with. And look, like, I think the whole piece of it about, like, what this means as far as those guys playing, it certainly creates a clearer path for them to play. But I think the equation is still the same.
By the way, Pittsburgh's carrying four quarterbacks to start their season. There are four quarterbacks on their active roster right now to start their year. It's a troubling thought. It is a troubling thought. Like, that's why, guys, I want them to, if the season ain't going to go our way, I want Joe to do well. But if the season doesn't go our way, which it probably ain't going to go our way, even though I'm taking the over on wins, and I'll tell you why coming up at 6:43, if it ain't going to go our way, I want it to space out a little bit and make sure that Dylan would be ready, then Shador would be ready, and space that out so we don't have to see anybody else. Because even the people who go, the circus is in town and you guys are all the clowns of the entire area talking about Shador, there's a curiosity there. There's definitely a curiosity to Dylan Gabriel going, hey, were they all the writers right? Because people love to prove writers wrong. Were the writers right, or were the writers wrong about training camp, about Dylan Gabriel? The other guy will make people go away. The other guy will turn fans away from the Cleveland Browns this year. I don't want that. I don't want it. I'll watch.
So saying, there's no
the
more,
other guy will turn the fans
there's
away.
There's no more curiosity about Deshaun.
No. No. This thing will end probably by June 1st of next year. Probably earlier than that. And that's it. And
yeah, I would say the only
it's
curiosity
a bad chapter in our history, and we're ready to move on.
Yeah, the problem is, I saw people talking about this yesterday that are kind of plugged into the NFL, and they understand, you know, how the cap works and everything, and they're like, you're still looking at Deshaun on the roster for another year after this. Like, there's no way they're going to absorb the cap hit that they would absorb that is still left. Like, he's going to be on this team unless he got injured. Because I heard an afternoon show yesterday was saying, yeah, you know, he's probably going to come out again and you're going to see more workout videos, and then there's going to be a setback. And that would not shock me. That does make sense. I don't think they're getting I think the days of hoping that the Browns are going to get some big settlement, you know, some insurance settlement, you know, I think that's not happening. I think you could just tell by what you're seeing out of Deshaun. Like, he is trying to come back. He's not.
Well, because his career is on the line. His career is on the line. Like, right. If he doesn't play, if he doesn't prove that he's healthy this year, it's like, who really wants
right.
that for the future? So he wants to get on the field so he can prove he has some zeal. I don't think he wants to be here as much as anybody else wants him to be here, guys. I think that he's ready for a change of scenery, and certainly Browns fans are ready for a change of scenery when it comes to that as well. I think, though, that he knows that he's got to show something that, hey, the Browns are moving in a different direction. I got to move in a different direction. I'm getting my money no matter what. I want to still be able to play football and double dip and go ahead and do those things. And that only comes with him being able to be on the field. If he doesn't hit the field this year, it makes it more difficult to bring him in, because you're bringing a lot of different conversations when you bring him in.
Yeah, but you said, and I think it's accurate, nobody wants to see him. There's no enthusiasm anymore. He still has some fans, sure. That's about it. But if he were to put together, we saw last time, when he put together a half of football, what that did to the fandom and
yes.
big sections of the Browns fans. What if he did something like that again? What if he came in an emergency situation in November and put together a half? I've seen a lot of bad quarterbacks put a half together.
Well, all of a sudden, we want to save this thing?
What if he did it?
If he had a second half against Baltimore, yeah. but he had a second half
and like
against
Dylan and Shador look like they're not NFL quarterbacks or whatever.
Yeah, I want to see what Lenora Sellers looks like in the Palmetto Bowl. That's what I'm more interested in. That's what I'm much more interested in. Hey, if he's able to, fine. There's a little bit of a sliver there that he's paid off on the $230 million or whatever it is now guaranteed, because the number seems to grow and change and fluctuate every time we say the sentence. But I'm ready to move on. And let me be abundantly clear. I don't argue his right to work as a professional football player. That's not my argument. My argument is that fans simply don't want him on the field. They don't want to see him. They will tolerate a lot of other things. They are curious to see Shador, even if they don't like Shador. And there's a lot of people who like Shador who want to see Shador. Before him, there'll be Dylan Gabriel, and we just went over that. But when it comes to him, I think a lot of people will go click, and that's it. And if he does anything great, Ken and Anthony will tell me about it. That's about it. And they will move on. And I don't want that to happen. So if he plays, he plays. And I don't begrudge him for trying to play.
Are you for the first time thinking there's a shot he'll get on the field this year?
I told you last week I think there's a shot he gets on the field this year. If they've got rid of Kenny Pickett, I said yesterday, just yesterday, go, hey, we're one quarterback closer to the rookies. We're also one quarterback closer to Deshaun Watson. Because in 4 weeks or 5 weeks after the, you know, he's off the IR and we actually go through the calendar here, he'll be a conversation to have about, should we carry four quarterbacks again? And we probably will carry four quarterbacks again. Because I think that he'll be eventually cleared to practice to some level to be able to play. I'm not sure. And if one of the other guys are there, you could always say, we feel that quarterbacks, Dylan Gabriel, Shador, enter their names whenever you want to. You can even bring back Joe and say, I'm trying to win football games, and I feel that this guy is better for our chance to win football games. And it's your opinion as the head coach, and you could say whatever you want to, and that's fine. But if there's only one guy in the cupboard, there in your Mother Hubbard, you better be able to play the guy, because you can't just refuse his right to work if that's going to be the way it goes. So you can go right on ahead and do it. I think a lot of people are thinking, hey, this is going to be a nice, easy settlement. He goes on, we go on, everybody's our separate ways. We can forget about this ugliness of the last how many years and move forward finally. It ain't going to be that easy, because he still is trying to resurrect a career for his future. I don't think he wants to leave it where he's carted off the field while he's crying under a towel after an injury.
Well, fans are cheering it.
There was not that many fans who cheered it.
It sounded like it on TV.
There were some, but there were not that many fans who cheered it. I was in the stadium, for crying out loud. We don't know the future. I think we all know the future of Joel Bitonio. Let's be honest with each other. I'd be surprised if he were back next year. Wyatt Teller is up in the air. Jack Conklin's up in the air. I don't know how well I'm going to be feeling next year. And you probably add in a rookie quarterback on that. It's going to be smoke him if you got him time for the 2026 Cleveland Browns, but that's next year.
I agree with you on the offensive line. What I'm wondering about is, as it stands today, your wide receiver room is one of the worst in football. We can all agree.
Yes,
right?
It is.
Your running back room today,
questionable,
is one of the worst in football, until I find out about Judkins.
See,
right?
I'm not willing to say worst, and that's me being hopeful. Because I don't know, you know, there's running back rooms that end up being good. Like wide receiver,
that
you kind of
no
know.
Names. That,
yeah, but running backs is like, okay, Dylan Sampson can contribute. Right, they now have two running backs. Well, Kevin was very short, yes, about that, going, there will be more than two running,
sure,
backs.
Well, I mean, they have to.
He was very agitated. It seemed like he was a little bit agitated.
Are they playing the waiver
question.
Wire on that, or are we getting, yes, Judkins news?
Yes, I think they're playing waiver wire on that. You talk about increasingly agitated, and you are really agitated over the Judkins stuff. We can get back to that coming up later on.
And tight ends. I am very high. Tight, I think everybody's high who's been to camp on Fannin.
Tight end is either good or promising.
And
because
Njoku,
you have Harold Fannin.
And Njoku he's always been a little inconsistent, but he's been reliable in terms of production.
Yes.
And with Joe Flacco, I think both those guys have a chance to really blossom. Now, how many games can you win if your running backs are below average, if your receivers are below average?
Not that many.
How many games can you win?
Not that many. But that's the beauty of having an over-under at 5.5, is that there's still not that many. And it might put you the bad spot to this. And if you are one of the cynical fans, you're like, hey, I'm a Browns fan, but I am done. If you are a Browns fan, but you're done with Andrew Berry and done with Kevin Stefanski, and DiBadesta ain't going anywhere, so you can't sit there and hope for that to happen, because that's a Rasputin situation that ain't changing anytime soon, more than likely. So if you have those guys and you're tired of them, you could always go, well, that's not going to help me at all. Because, A, that's more likely that they stay. And if you don't trust Andrew Berry to make those picks, then, boy, you're going to have a real tough time trusting him to make the pick for the quarterback next year. And, B, you're not going to have a higher draft pick there if you win six games. I mean, that puts you, what, fifth? Probably fourth, somewhere in there, if you're a six-game winner. That might leave you out. So you're going to have to hope that, like, the Giants, you got to hope Jackson Dart looks promising and that they suck because you want to be able to move with them. You got to hope that the Saints, that Tyler Shuck eventually plays, which, yeah, man.
Who's their starter again? Is it Spencer Rattler?
Spencer Rattler to start the season.
All right, that's worse. That's definitely worse than Joe Flacco.
Yes.
Right? We all can agree there.
You have to hope that Tyler Shuck looks good and they suck, because if he can't play and they suck, then they're just going to
go back to the well. Yep.
So that's what you have to hope right now. So we're doing a lot of long term planning here, but I'm just pointing out that And if I wear it fine, I guess I've relied on the Browns for my happiness and I failed again. That's a lesson I just can't learn. But I think that they're going to line up. They're going to try to run the football. They're going to try to eliminate these stupid pre-snap penalties, because hopefully they actually have a plan to go into games with instead of this scattershot stuff that they were doing before. And hopefully they eliminate these turnovers.
Elijah Moore is not here anymore, right?
No, Elijah Moore is not here anymore. So you're hoping that they eliminate these turnovers or do their best to eliminate these turnovers. And God, I pray that, can we just be plus one in the turnover margin? And if you're plus one in the turnover margin, I think you're winning six games this year. I can't sit there and pick which one, because we never know at the beginning of the season. I mean, there was a time that we thought for sure in 2017 when they did lose every game that the Green Bay game was a guaranteed loss. You ended up taking on, Huntley?
Yeah.
Who ended up playing against you, and you were up by 14 going into the fourth quarter and still lost that game. So, I mean, things change during a regular season. So I can't pick which ones they're going to win.
Even last year, where it's amazing. We only won three games last year. But you were able to split the Baltimore series and the Pittsburgh series. And it feels like every year you're beating Cincinnati, Baltimore, and Pittsburgh. Is that going to continue this year? You know, how do you feel about in the division grabbing some wins against the AFC North? And when we do AFC North.
Like, do I feel better about the team then?
Just in general, we've been able. This has been a Stefanski strength, I believe. For so many years, under all the other coaches, we just lose to the AFC North teams. And that was when they had, Andy Dalton. I keep thinking the backup.
Yep, Ben Roethlisberger, Joe Flacco.
Yeah, my God, those guys, they swept us every year almost. Mm-hmm. Well, under Stefanski, even with bad Browns teams, you've been able to beat AFC North teams. Is that going to continue this year? Baltimore. Are you going to be able to steal one from Baltimore? Are you going to be able to steal one
Baltimore looks to me like a 15-win team. Let me just answer it right now. I think you can split with the other two teams.
So we might go backwards against Baltimore, but you still should be able to split Cincinnati. But obviously, we know how this looks if you don't beat Cincinnati in the opener.
But I did just get done saying I can't really pick which ones they're going to win on the schedule right now. Because again, if Lamar Jackson goes down, what do they have behind him? Now, they still are probably a team that can stay afloat, but we can't guarantee those things. So the only thing that I'm pointing out is that the schedule changes, and the only thing I can guarantee that as of right now with everybody healthy, I can't guarantee it, but the only thing I think right now with everybody healthy is that I think they're going to get the six wins. Now, again, six wins can be a negative thing for a lot of fans out there, depending on how you're seeing this season, because I think there's plenty of people who are going, Kenny, I'm done with Kevin. I'm done with Andrew. I'm tired of you telling me they're nice guys. I don't care if they're jerks. I don't care if they throw old women down the steps. They want to win. And so they don't care. And they probably are hoping that it is a proven point. I bet there's a lot of fans out there that are hoping it's a proven point that these guys ain't it, that there needs to be a regime change, and we're going to have a high pick. That's what I think they're hoping for. And 3-14 last year and running it back with some of the ideas that they've had in the past would tell them that they are perfectly within their right to think that way. I disagree. But they're perfectly in their right to think that way, because my disagreement is just on the fact that I don't like a lot of change and I want it to work out with them. But other than that, I don't have a whole lot to go on here. I mean, when I brought up the Kenny Pickett thing yesterday, I had a couple of people and I was doing the Zach Jackson line. I said, like, guys, I would have rather not traded for Kenny Pickett, given the reps to the young kids, and then worked our way throughout there. Well, we got a higher fifth. We set a high bar around here for success, don't we? We did get a higher fifth out of it for Kenny Pickett. But, well, 20 or 30 reps. I don't know. We just spent four weeks bickering with each other about how many reps Shador Sanders was not getting. I would have rather just handed him the reps with Dylan Gabriel and been on with it, especially because he was still getting reps while he was injured. Like, that's the ticky-tack fights we are having right now. And I'm not trying to get personal with anybody, but these are the ticky-tack fights we're having right now because we're holding on to anything because I don't want the guys really fired, but I can't make big arguments for him. I can't make a tremendous argument for him. And I think that that's part of the reason in the back of my head over this last month that I have been so overzealous about Shador. Because I want it to work. I want this to work. I hate looking for coaches. I hate looking for GMs. Like, if I look for quarterbacks, guys, you watch the games on Saturday. Like, you're going to see Cade Klubnik go on against Garrett Nussmeier. Boom, that's fish in a barrel. You're going to get to see it. You're going to have a commentary on it. I have to sit there and work phones and try to text people that I haven't kept up with in months when we talk about head coaches. And when it comes to general managers, it's even worse because that's all theory. And they all hate each other. All the scouts hate each other. So they all talk trash about each other. So you don't know what you're getting. When they got Andrew Berry, true or not, Tone, I mean, you work the phones better than I do in a lot of things. How many people were sitting there saying nice things about Andrew? The media was saying nice things about Andrew. There were plenty of guys going, this guy sucks. You guys are idiots to bring him in. And I go, no. We had Andrew in Cleveland. We had Andrew in Cleveland. I mean, it happens all the time. So I hate it. I don't want to go looking for new guys. I want Andrew to work. 216-474-0092. Am I right to take the over here?
You know, we're so close on how we feel about this team, and you're always a little more optimistic in this case. I think you made a great case with the Lions. I do think they have a chance to be really good. I just question, is the offense going to be good with Joe Flacco? The defense seems like it should be really good. You are relying big time on a rookie at linebacker who has looked awesome in the preseason, but is he going to be as good as, you know, JOK has been the last few years? I know the different types of players.
I've left my back door open on this argument, and you haven't found it yet. I want to see if you find it after this call. Cool Ray in Bedford, you're next up on the fan. Hello.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hi.
Hey, you right. I'm one of those guys. This regime need to be gone, 100%.
I told you.
And it's not – because you guys talk like Kevin has inherited this team. He had a good team. Now this is a rebuild. And then real Browns fans, we don't really care about splitting the wins a lot between Baltimore and all those guys. We don't really care about that. At the end of the year, we at the bottom of the AFC North. We care about winning and become a playoff team and a Super Bowl contending team. To be at the bottom and just to say, oh, we beat Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh's going to the playoff, or we beat one game in Baltimore and Baltimore is going to the playoff, and we watching these guys in November, September, you know, and going to the playoff, we don't care about that, man. We want to be part of that. We want playoff games here in Cleveland. That's what we want.
Well, you're going to have to crawl before you walk. It ain't going to happen this year. So you want these guys to fail is what you're telling me, Cool Ray? You think it's better for the franchise's health?
They already done failed. They've been failing for 7 years now. They failed already.
Well, they're still there. So you're going to have to hope for another year of failure. Are you willing to root against your favorite football team then, Cool Ray?
Absolutely. If it means to get them guys out of here, yes. We are the Dallas Cowboys in reverse with Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones will fire a coach and coach himself, and Haslam will keep a bad coach and just keep selling.
You really want to use Jerry Jones as an example of the good on this?
That's exactly what's happening, man. Jerry Jones will fire a coach, a Hall of Fame coach, and continue to win, and we will keep a bad coach and continue to lose.
I don't know. Man, you lost me at Jerry Jones. Cool, Ray. Frank in Cleveland, got to be quick. Go ahead.
Hey, fellas, I'm just saying, I'm with you, Ken. I don't think we're going to be as bad as everybody thinking we're going to be. We're going to be in a lot of closer games more than anything, but I got six out of this. I put it in last night. I put them on my thing for six games, man.
Frank, I thank you very much for the call. 216-474-0092. I left my back door open on this argument. I give Tone 5 minutes to realize where there's a flaw in my over. Florio saying weird stuff again. Set her on Baskin and Phelps yesterday. Coming up in like 10 seconds. Sports Talk of the Fan presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Greco coming up in just about 40 minutes. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. He was on with Baskin and Phelps yesterday. This man is a dog to a bone. I like Florio. I'm entertained by Florio.
Oh, I love his creativity.
Florio offered me to kick him off the show one time in an argument. It was the Myles Garrett going to jail thing. Florio is a creative person. And he tried to do it with Shador during the draft. Then he tried to do it again with Shamar Stewart. And now, damn it, he's going to get his work in when it comes to Quinshon Judkins. He was asked on Baskin and Phelps yesterday why the Browns haven't signed Judkins amid an NFL investigation. I want you to hear this first before we go to the big one. Hit it.
I think the frontline reality for Judkins and the Browns is the fact that if he would show up, they'd probably put him on paid leave while they figure out what they're going to do about this personal conduct policy issue. Even though he's not going to be prosecuted, the league still does its own investigation. And if his alleged victim is willing to cooperate with the league, then he potentially ends up being suspended. It happened to Ezekiel Elliott. He was never arrested. He was never even sued. He ended up being suspended 6 games by the NFL. But the reality is, as that plays out, however long it takes or short it takes, I think the Browns are delaying signing him because the first order of business is you got to put him on paid leave if you're going to bring him to camp. So why bother to even start down the road of signing the contract until they know how many games he's going to miss?
Before we go to the other clip, how often have you been asked about Quinshon Judkins?
Actually, not that much.
I'm asked about it daily. Are you serious?
Yeah, just the quarterback stuff is so much more. And
those are usually opinions, but I get asked about Quinshon Judkins and his future on a daily basis. And I'm like, guys, I know as much as you do.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's definitely weird because, you know, Florio says he would be put on paid leave immediately. Is that from the Browns or from the commissioner's exempt list?
It's probably the commissioner's exempt.
Yeah, because the Browns would not sign him and then put him on leave.
No.
That would make no sense whatsoever. No. And it, you know, I think Mary Kay had an update, which wasn't much of an update at all yesterday, just checking in on the league. And the league
taking
saying
shots at Mary Kay.
There's still no, I mean, the update was that she talked to the league. And the
she
league,
can see you on YouTube now. You better watch your face.
And there was no, it's that there was no update at all from the league. The league is saying that the investigations are
continuing.
Well,
Roger can see you on the YouTube now as well, so you better watch your face. He's even more powerful than that. But Florio went further, and this is, I love it. I absolutely love it. Again, did it with Shador during the draft. Did it with Shamar Stewart during camp. Third time, maybe it's a charm for Mike Florio and Quinshon Judkins.
If Judkins really wanted to go back and play college football, you start the process by sending a letter to the NCAA demanding that they abandon a rule that you believe is an antitrust violation. You give them a short time frame to respond. If they don't, you go to court. You seek a temporary restraining order. You seek a preliminary injunction. You get a ruling that he's allowed to go back and play, even if it's during this season. He could do it if he wanted to do it. It's an option, and I guess that's the point. Even if a guy didn't do it, even if Shedeur Sanders didn't decide once he got through 4 rounds of the draft to say, I'm just going to go back to Colorado next year. It's an option that wasn't there in the past. And one of these days, one of these players is going to take advantage of that option.
Someone's going to do it at some point. I think that Florio wants to be the one that gives the idea.
Okay,
someone's going to do it.
Let me ask something, because it seems really far-fetched that he would do this. At this stage, I mean, it's late August. The Buckeyes. First of all, is he even saying would he definitely go to Ohio State?
No.
Is that
he just said back to college.
Yeah, is that spot even open for him? I do think Quinshon Judkins is way better than C.J. Donaldson and, you know, who else? I know they have young Bo Jackson, and James Peoples is your starter, it looks like, right now. And Ohio State had a much better running back situation last year going into the season, and I think they have going this year. But it's Ohio State. You know, they assume they're going to reload every single year.
Well, that's Brady Quinn about that 905.
So what would be the situation if you're Judkins? Would it be worth it? Would there be a spot at one of the top teams that is opened up right now for him? And could he work his way into what? A first round pick next year? How much more guaranteed money?
How much money is he going to get from a college team with all this going on?
That's I'm not even talking about that in terms of NIL. I mean, maybe he could get some NIL, but I'm talking about improving his draft stock. Is there a chance he could improve his draft stock?
No, I don't think so.
Could he go from a second rounder to a first rounder?
Well, you went back to college. To get in on a roster now, aren't you basically taking a year off? If you're Quinshon Judkins,
telling me a team couldn't take him, or would he? Well, the eligibility too. Like, How would the eligibility work?
I think I know we don't talk. Kind of looking at it like, how many rules are there? Well, are there any rules?
That is true, but a team and their compliance would have to.
The rule used to be, and I don't know if it still is for the NCAA, once you signed with an agent, you couldn't be an amateur athlete anymore. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you can sign with an agent whenever you want now. So that's why he's bringing it up, right? But regardless of if he went back, he would still have a pending NFL suspension over his head. And I think that would hurt, any draft, especially if he's a fringy round guy, right?
Yes.
I don't know that he can get much better than where he was drafted.
I mean, listen, I don't know if this year is going to happen. So it's not like I'm not that desperate to bring in Quinshon Judkins. It sucks that he's not with the team, and it sucks that he put himself in this situation.
What do you mean you're not sure this season is even happening? Why is this so egregious?
We're still in this holding pattern.
Yeah.
And again, you're the one who keeps bringing up that I'm not arguing with you about that, but I mean, you keep bringing up that they have photos, so yeah. They might be seeing these photos going, how do we handle something like this? So
I imagine
it could
they're
be
trying
a significant suspension.
I imagine they've attempted to talk to, the alleged victim as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea if she is going to, collaborate with them, cooperate at all. So, but I'm not seeing of the things like Mike Hall last year, there was a gun involved. There's no gun involved here. He got... what, 5 games? How could this be a season? Like,
be a season, but as well as I do, when it comes to the NFL, things that can get out in the public, they're in the court of public opinion. They are not in the court of law. So if all of a sudden they go, hey, you know what? Charges have been dropped. He said, she said, mm-hmm. No penalty. I don't think that would be the case, but say it were to be the case, and then all of a sudden some bad photos come out there. The NFL is not in that business. They learned that lesson the hard way with Ray Rice, and they don't want to do it again.
The bad thing now for Judkins is, it's not even going to be a time served. The suspension starts when he signs a contract because there's no time served. He hasn't been suspended or anything. So we're just delaying. That's why... He needs to sign a contract. Are the Browns refusing to really negotiate here?
I think they're waiting and seeing until the NFL comes to them and tells them what they think the penalty is going to be.
I think that same thing.
This is massively confusing. Like, say he did actually want to go to college. You got to think about the miles that are on you. He got money to go to Ole Miss, and then he got more money to go to Ohio State. So he's got money. But if you're going back to college, well, the season has technically already started.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you're getting back there and who can offer you what and who's going to offer you what. Now, I think it's probably in your best interest to go along.
I think most of these teams are pretty tapped out
with your
year.
Exactly. So I think it's probably in your best interest. If you want to sit out the year and go back to college, I guess you can do that. If you want to sit out the year and try to refile for the draft, I guess you can do that. But it's probably in your best interest to just move forward and deal with all this and then get it behind you and start your NFL career. Because I don't know what's left for you back in college. You might be able to make more money in a year than you were going to make. But
okay, if you're the
maybe
Browns,
that's still the case.
If you're the Browns, so we've talked about it from Judkins' perspective. If you're the Browns, are you playing hardball right now, or don't you just want to get him in?
I don't know if it's hardball.
If you can get him in, then the suspension, once it gets wrapped up, can start. We can talk about, or the commissioner is exemplist. That process can get started, at least. It can't get started until you get him in. But if they're playing hardball,
they can suspend him until he gets... a contract with the Browns?
No. What I mean is the commissioner's exemplist can get started.
Okay.
And then they can force the action. And if the NFL is holding them out, then at least you can get time served or whatever. But none of that can get started until you bring them in.
So
to me, if the Browns are playing hardball, they're just kind of screwing themselves.
But would you say you're not going to be Chris Matthews and you're not going to play hardball? Then are you signing him to the guaranteed contract that he wanted?
Well, I told you that. Who cares? It's Jimmy Haslam's money,
it's
right?
Don't
we say that all the time? Jimmy Haslam's money. It's not my money.
Hold
who cares?
On.
He's got
I'm
more
under,
money than anybody. He's liquid. He has more money. We have a strategic advantage with the Browns. I hear this from every Browns
homer.
Here
you go cherry picking
every
again.
Town.
Here we go cherry
every time.
Picking.
Do I not hear it? Every time. We have more money that puts us in a fortuitous advantage to be able to throw at guys. So let's start with the advantage.
Don't be silly.
Am I getting the advantage on Judkins?
Don't be silly.
Or are we screwing ourselves by waiting and waiting and waiting, and then we don't get games out of them?
Okay, now I need you to actually pretend that you're a general manager for the Cleveland Browns, because you can't just sit there and say, if you're Andrew Berry, well, it's not my money, so I'll sign you to whatever. No general manager is actually going to do that.
Does matter now.
The money matters to the general manager. I'm acting you to act like a general manager here, okay?
I've heard differently from many Browns people.
You've heard differently from many Browns people, because I think the fan doesn't care. Just sign him to the contract. I'm talking about you as a general manager here.
I'm just saying, as Anthony Lima, let's get him in.
Okay.
Let's get him in. Start the process. Why would we wait?
But I have to have you put yourself in Andrew Berry's shoes is what I need you to do. Sure. So if you were Andrew Berry, are you going to give him guaranteed money?
You bring him in. I need a running back. I need a running back.
But he's not going to be available to you.
Let's go.
I need a bunch of running backs. I don't know if he's going to be available to me.
This delays his availability. Every minute we play hardball delays his availability is what I'm saying.
Is it hardball if I don't know what the NFL is going to do? And I can't get it, even if I wanted to. Say I was like, hey, man, you put yourself in a bad spot. You put us in a bad spot here with your your behavior, no matter what.
Yep.
And so I can't sign you to the money that's there. It takes two people. Like, he's got to grab a pen and sign the contract. So, I can't just force him to come back to Cleveland.
So what I wonder, kind of in all of this talk, like the Browns know everything that there is to know, right? They've done an investigation, right?
I can't say that over the last how many years. Who the hell am I to say that they know everything?
They went and obtained a polygraph for one of the players. So they've done the investigative work on other players, and they gave that guy guaranteed money.
Fool me once, shame on you.
Do the Browns know something?
Fool me twice, you can't get fooled again.
Does this worry you a little bit, Kenny? Do the Browns know more information, and they're like, ooh, boy.
I don't know.
This suspension could be way worse. We don't want to do it.
Remember, it leads us to jump to these conclusions. Did it or did it not come out? It came out later that there was a history, that there was somehow a history of this behavior. So are the Browns just running with a pen? Here you go, sign anything.
Wait, what do you mean a
they
history?
They had said that she had claimed that there was a history of behavior like this with Quinshon Judkins. That was what was claimed by her. So now they don't know what everything else is going on there. So there's something, it's like, hey, you know what? These are people. You're in a people business. It's terrible. It's unfortunate what allegedly went down, but that's the business that you're in. Okay, fine. I guess I could try to feel bad for him on that case, but they're a professional sports team, so I don't. So now are you really going to go forward and run and try to sign him to things? Because you're saying, well, do they know everything? Well, they should know everything. I don't know if they know everything.
Man, if there was a big gap in their evaluations and, you know, all the character stuff, if they didn't do their due diligence like they should have, then that comes back on them.
Well, you know, according to the tweets I see, they're doing their due diligence on everything. But I don't think we have the full story yet. And because we don't have the full story yet, I don't know what you can sign the guy to. If he's just crossing his arms, or his agent is just crossing his arms here and saying, absolutely not, then I don't know if you could just offer him exactly what he wants.
That's a terrible start to a relationship.
Well, with the Nick Emanuari contract, what was it, like 13.6 guaranteed? That's not a lot of money. Or 11.6 or something like that guaranteed. That's still not a lot of money for a second-round pick, a high second-round pick. And it is off to a rocky relationship. But, I mean, until the NFL gets back to me on what they're going to do, how can I sign the guy? And is there something there? Did they ask Florio? Is there something there where he might want to wait until the NFL gets back to them on something? Like, I don't know that part either. Like, history tells me it's time to rip the Browns. But this situation may tell me I still need more information, and the NFL ain't giving me any. So maybe we'll know more by Thursday by the time Mary Kay joins us. 216-474-0092. Like, that's... This went way longer than I thought it was going to do, but that's where I'm at. So he's not available to you, so I'm moving on with Dylan Sampson, and I'm hoping that Dylan Sampson and Jerome Ford can help me out. And who was the guy they brought into camp that looked pretty good? Who was the other fire plug? I don't know. He might be cut by 4 o'clock today, so I'm not sure. I don't want to start saying names that aren't going to be there.
Pierre Strong's been here.
Well, Pierre Strong, but there was the other guy that his name escapes me right now that I'm sure I'm going to open
He's
up to a lot of.
Obviously done so check, well that we can't
check the U. Check the U. Because his name escapes me. Okay, I know Aiden Huntington, but I don't know the. Come on, they got to be putting it on the YouTube page right now.
We're a little bit. We've got
a little delay, Ken.
Because they're taking the Odyssey broadcast feed, and so it's always going to be a little behind. Plus, you know, we have wild cannons on this show. We have people calling up. We got to make sure.
Amani Marshall, fine-dressed Amani Marshall. Thank you.
If it helps right now on ESPN, the second on the depth chart is Quinshon Judkins.
Oh, boy.
Probably want to update.
For a team built on the running game, huh?
No, he's not.
That's...
Is Jim Brown first on the depth chart, if that's what they're doing?
How does this make you feel about the opener against Cincinnati?
Henry Ford is first.
What are they doing?
I don't know what they're doing. The guy's not on the team. He doesn't have a contract with the team. He's second on the depth chart. This is ESPN's, not the Browns.
Here come just the Marshalls. See not. The Marshall.
Yeah.
Marshall.
Thank you guys very much for watching and listening and watching today. This is what I'm trying not to get excited about. Parker Messick was great. 7 innings, struck out 6, scoreless. He's off to a great start. I mean, his last outing, again, they should have won that game.
Yeah, got ruined.
You know, the Mountie ended up blowing the save, and then we ended up having a problem. But I'm concerned about the rotation, and because I think we're so concerned about the rotation, we tend to be overzealous. We've become accustomed to things here in Cleveland. I think anywhere you become accustomed to certain things in life. In Cleveland, I think you've become accustomed to the Browns falling short, to say the least. I think you've become accustomed to the Cavs pulling out all the stops to go for anything, to try to win, to go for broke, holding the Cavaliers to an exceedingly high standard. I think that you've grown accustomed to the Guardians finding good pitching and consistently churning out Cy Young quality pitching. I mean, that's a strong thing to say, but if you look over the last 20 years, it's a who's who of pitchers with the Cleveland Guardians. And I think this year what's made me so concerned for the future is that, really, put Parker Messick aside just for a second. Right now I feel you have, and Owen, maybe I want you to jump in on this as well. It feels to me like right now you have a bunch of third starters. Tanner Bibee, I don't know. We know what happened the other day. It was documented. We talked about it 3 different times yesterday. Of the argument that he and Stephen Vogt had, I don't buy at all what Stephen Vogt said about trying to get people fired up. You were just trying to get people fired up. You're not yelling at him and cussing at him in the dugout. Gavin Williams has been all over the place. He's been great. He's been almost no-hitter, and then there's times where he just gets blown up. Slade Ciccone has not had a good August, to say the least.
Yeah, did he regress to the mean? Is it some little more of a book on him?
Yeah, Logan Allen is Logan Allen. And so you have a bunch of third and fourth starter guys. And my advice is, or not my advice, my hope is that you reset yourself during the offseason, understand that this is kind of the rotation of what it is, and hopefully guys are able to clear the mechanism and go forward. That said, who the hell knows what's going to happen with Tanner Bibee during the offseason if there's more to it than what we just saw in the dugout. And so because I'm so concerned about the other four, I think a lot of us look at Parker Messick and go, okay, that's the Guardians we know. That's the Guardians pitching staff we know. It's like, well, it's only been a couple of outings. But what a great couple of outings it's been for Parker Messick. It's been very nice. So I do it with a grain of salt. Well, like I want to give him his credit because this is a great outing.
It always has to come from within with the Guardians because they're never going to go out and sign an ace or trade for an ace, right? Like the only thing they'll do is they'll try to redeem somebody, or like when they bring in, you know, Matt Boyd or Alex Cobb. But like they're not a team that's going to be able to ever go get. They have to develop an ace.
Yes,
that is the only chance they've got.
Well, they can kind of redevelop guys for other people. Like Matt Boyd, when he got traded to the Cubs, was like, yeah, Guardians helped me out tremendously. Like they helped me out significantly. And it was like, well, where's this?
We're not going to even pay $15 million for somebody, yeah. $15 a year, for somebody at his level.
So I don't want to be like a wet blanket on a guy who's just a young kid. And I saw, like, when they were in Arizona last week, I saw the interviews with his parents. That was a really nice thing. I started to realize that I am getting a little older as they started to look closer to my age. So that's something that you have to take in, because you're just like, you see their parents and they kind of still look like your parents. And now it's like, that mom and dad is probably the same type of mom and dad I would see at a youth football game on a Saturday. Like that's still, we're getting there now. But it's a great outing. And I just don't like, and I don't want to be a wet blanket for it. Like, I want to calm myself down, but I don't want to have to calm everybody else down.
Well, also, most potential aces, aren't they able to hit the gun at 98, 99? Like, don't we think about that? I know it always hasn't been that case for us either, but when you're projecting guys that are going to be the rock solid starters in your rotation.
The only other thing you look at is pitch count and how deep they go into games. That's for the ace thing. And that's why Bibee has been the closest thing, because he's the one guy that'll go 110 pitches and not seem to be affected, although he's not been great. So I can't say he's not been affected by all of that. But yeah, if you look at what the Guardians traditionally have done, right now you got to feel like, well, Messick's the next chance you have at it, because it's not going to be Bibee. It isn't. Where they've been screwed in the whole development process is they've always developed the next guy. Well, that next guy was supposed to be Tristan McKenzie.
Yeah.
And Tristan McKenzie not being that next guy has really thrown everything.
Yeah.
You've got to retool it all and try again with a new guy. And now you have to speed up the process you had.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think I've done that with some of the other guys. I think we've all done that to some degree with the other guys. Like Tanner Bibee's probably not supposed to be. He's an opening day starter for you because of who you are,
right?
But he's probably not supposed to be an opening day starter on a contending baseball team. So you go from last year to this year. You're right. It's Tristan McKenzie, and then it kind of rolls downhill. And now that I've put probably too high of expectations on Gavin Williams, Tanner Bibee, Slade Ciccone, not as much, but then all of a sudden, like in July, it started going. Now August, we're kind of like, okay, that's a third starter, fourth starter somewhere in there. And I now have taken my hopes and thrown them on to Parker Messick in two outings, which have been fantastic outings. But, I mean, he can go out there and get blown up and we can never hear of him again. So I want to give him the credit due where he did. Like, these are good outings for him. He should be 2-0. This should be a great, great start for him. And it is a great, great start for him. I mean, last night was fantastic. Seven innings. And, again, I think he struck out six. So it's a great start for a young man who – I think it's open right now. And my biggest concern, I didn't think they were going to make the postseason last month. I don't want to say the season's over because it was way too early. Now I'm thinking, yeah, the season's over, especially, and we're going to get to the Carlos Santana thing here in just a second. But I wanted to go, all right, if I have a starting rotation, then I'm better for the long term. But now I don't know what my starting rotation is. So now I'm getting worked up over what their future is, because you have Jose at 33, going on 33. You have your starting rotation that's kind of up in the air. And then after Jose, like, what am I going to do? Like, you and I had a brief conversation yesterday about Stephen Kwan. I think there's a lot of people who were down to sign Stephen Kwan who are going, you know, this is 3 years in a row where it's been a second half slide for Stephen. Are we sure we want the Guardians to invest that type of money in him? And my answer is, who replaces Stephen Kwan? So now I'm left with more questions than answers.
What's the money even at? It's probably nowhere near the type of contract he originally been looking for when numbers were thrown around.
Yeah, maybe it's just more affordable now.
Yeah.
You guys were stuck on $30 million, and I never thought that was a thing. I thought 22 was the cap for the Guardians, and I don't even know if 22 is it right now.
Okay, that's my next question. Do you think that 22 was it? And you say no. So
I mean, right now, for a guy, he's giving you one thing consistently, and it's that he's going to start the season hot as hell. And by the time you get to August, he's going to be back to the pack.
Yeah, can't guarantee anything after that.
So Carlos Santana, they're going to put him on waivers. That was reported by The Athletic. Apparently, they didn't ask him that question of Vogt yesterday. We have nothing in here. Do we know if Vogt said anything about this? I mean, they could at least... So I got nothing on Carlos Santana? Really? Okay. That's odd. I mean, if there's always a rumor of a team doing something and it hasn't happened yet, you still go, Kevin, and he's like, we're not going to speak about that until we're ready to speak about that. That's what it is. Maybe that's what it is, and somebody didn't cut it up. I'm not sure, but I don't see anything there. Carlos Santana, his third stint with the Guardians is done. Where do you put Carlos Santana?
I was wondering just how many Guardians, 11 years? Was it 11 seasons that he played with the Guardians? That's got to be up there, right? Like, who... How many guys have we had that have had more seasons?
Bob Feller?
Than Carlo? Well, I'm just talking modern day.
Jose's there right now.
Jose's there.
Yeah.
And then who?
Did Tommy end up getting there by the time he came back
after
again?
After he came back?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. I mean, Carlos Santana, longtime Gardo. Did anybody celebrate that he got waived?
Celebrate?
I don't think anybody celebrated. Like, people are going, don't celebrate. I don't think I'm seeing anybody celebrating Carlos Santana getting waived.
Oh, no. I saw it was the people that, A, didn't want this to begin with, thought it was wasting time blocking other guys. And certainly that conversation got louder the minute they had started the 10-game losing streak. The minute they were mired in that, it was like, what's the point of Carlos Santana at this point?
Okay,
so I think those are the people who were getting arguments about that daily. But we've had those people reach out to us.
I don't think it's anything to celebrate, though.
I think they're just celebrating being right. Like, they were like, this whole thing was a waste of time.
When we were in the 10-game losing streak, I was ready for them to find a different home for him so that we could see Kafis. They brought Kafis up and they put him in the outfield.
Yeah.
Last night, Kafis was on first base, where he should be, right? Yeah. That's where he's been playing.
Yes, of course.
But by this time, it's what have you done for me for the last losing streak?
Well, yeah.
You've waited too long to make this move.
I still don't think it was anything. Even if they would have made that move at the trade deadline, right. It's nothing to
and
celebrate.
And I wouldn't have celebrated that either.
Yeah, like if they would have traded away. Like, who's a guy that everybody was annoyed by with the Guardians here over the last 3 years? Is there anybody that anybody, like, I hate to say Rocchio, because I think he plays his ass off as hard as he can. He's just not that great.
Even like Ahmed Rosario.
Okay, Ahmed Rosario is the one. There you go. Ahmed Rosario. If you wanted to sit there and celebrate Ahmed Rosario, all right, fine, I guess, because you get out from underneath that stuff. But I don't think that Carlos Santana is anybody to celebrate because you've had a very long... Right. And let's
this
be...
This wasn't Josh Bell who you brought in and hoped something happened and then it didn't happen.
But there's a history there. I don't want to sell... Even if they would have traded him for something, I don't want to celebrate Carlos Santana being placed on waivers. I just think that's disrespectful to a guy who's given a lot of his life and his career... And he's been paid a hell of a lot of money to do so, fine. But, I mean, there's a lot there, a lot of history there with Guardians fans. I mean, you remember, he came in as one of the premier catching prospects in all of baseball, started off hot as hell, hurt his knee, became a first baseman, became a fine baseball player for you for a long time, was always able to draw a walk, was never really a guy. Like, he hit some home runs, obviously, but he was never really a guy who I think was feast or famine. I mean, he would go through the beginning of the year slumps. April and May were not really good to him. He would start to get out of it by late May, and then he would take off for the rest of the year, and Carlos would be great. But that's 11 years of Carlos Santana baseball. I don't think it's anything to celebrate. It's just another thing of what this season is. And this season has been, I'm not going to say collapse, because they weren't really in first place to begin with, but it's been a tremendous disappointment coming off of last year.
So he is 12th all-time in games played for the organization. 1,450. That is ahead of Jim Thome.
I want to know, since Kurt Flood, though, like, ever since free agency, how, like, where is he at?
By the way, he's 51 games ahead of Thome. Kenny Lofton had 1,276, so he was, you know, over a season ahead of Kenny. Those are, you know, outside of Jose Ramirez. Oh, Omar was at 1,478, so he had 28 games more than Carlos Santana. So he had a chance.
That's a long history.
This year to catch Omar.
You're talking about legends there.
Overall.
Yeah, you're talking about legends there. I mean, the legends
of the
90s.
Carlos is not, he's not into Kenny Lofton, Jim Thome, Omar Vizquel. Like, I don't think he touches
that group stands
that level.
The only guys that come close to that level will be a team that wins a World Series. Until they win a World Series, that no one touches the 90s Indians for what they did, for what they meant. The time in the history of the city, the time with the history of one of the teams moving, the Browns moving, the new stadium, everything, finally getting out from under the thumb of Art Modell, because that's one of the underrated things that we say. Like, we only blame football with Art Modell, but it's like his rent was so considerably high on that. I know we loved it, but he left it in disrepair. His rent was so high that it did not afford the Indians to be able to keep any of their players. And so it kept the Indians in the cellar for a long time. Now, that turned into a diatribe on Art Modell. I don't want to do it. But I think before and after free agency, I think, is the big deal. But, yeah, he's in that. I think he's in that second tier. I think he's in that second tier of players that fans really, I think they have a respect for him. I think you'll find a couple of jerseys. The guys who were romanticized are the guys you just mentioned who are in the 90s. But Carlos Santana, certainly, there's a lot of respect for Carlos Santana. I put him in the Victor Martinez category, where there's some fans who love him, and I will always have a immense amount of respect for him. An immense amount. He was a good guardian for a long time. And we wish him well in his future endeavors. Hopefully he picks up with one of the surging teams in the American or National League, and he's able to go out there and ring chase, because we're just going home after our season. Dave Portnoy, a Barstool Sports and Fox Sports, ain't allowed in the stadium. What the hell's going on down there in Columbus, Tone?
It's amazing.
You've gone soft, according to a lot of people out there.
They have gone soft.
You're not allowed. What was the first thing you ain't allowed to do? Oh, they're introducing legislature to change the times of kickoff.
Oh, yeah, to get it out of the big noon kickoff.
You got big government getting involved trying to change that, and now you got Dave Portnoy being banned from the stadium.
Well, Dave Portnoy is a provocateur, Kenny, and a lot of his content during college football season revolves around him ripping into Ohio State and doing it in a way that can be very entertaining, without a doubt. But now he got elevated to this role with Fox that has the games, that obviously has their on-location show. We were going to be talking to Brady Quinn, so we'll ask Brady about it, right? We'll have... You know, at times, Urban Meyer, who we had on last week, he's on that show. And Charles Woodson has been on that show. So they've always represented or had representation from the different schools. And I think they brought in David Portnoy because of the Barstool crowd. Like, you never know what he's going to say. And I think he is amazingly entertaining. He'll throw stuff out there when it comes to sports, news, culture, politics, anything. He throws it all in there. And he has had some incendiary things to say about Ohio State. And so Ohio State's like, we don't want him coming. He's also a Michigan booster, we should add. And he's also dangled all sorts of money to get other players so that they can, for the express purpose of beating Ohio State. And he is always trolling Ohio State at all times. This is why this is great.
He's not being allowed to come into the stadium because he trolls Ohio State?
Yeah, this is, well, he's also, remember,
I mean, that's pretty.
He's a booster. You know, Urban Meyer is not a booster for Ohio State. Even though it's funny, he has raised money, I'm sure. He's probably spoken at events, but he's not paying players to go to Ohio State the way that Portnoy is to Michigan.
So wait, any booster from a Michigan can't go to the Ohio State-Michigan game?
I don't know
then?
What their policy
is. Is that their policy?
But I think they're adding up everything together. He's openly mocking Ohio State every chance he gets. He trashes the fan base. He trashes, you know, people that are in the program. Well, they have a hefty contract with Fox. Remember, they are partners, so I'm sure they voice their displeasure at having somebody who trashes their program every day come on television, which is supposed to be an infomercial for the conference and for the teams in the conference.
He's a fan of one of the teams in the conference.
But he's not exactly promoting Ohio State, and so they're like, well, we don't want this. Well, I think it's absolutely great is because just to see the look on Ken's face, as much as Dave Portnoy is going to rub it in and be a troll and appeal to the trolls like Ken, who hates Ohio State, it is great to see people like Ken get worked up over this.
Michigan
fans like Ken,
here we go,
who are watching from all over the country on YouTube right now, and to see that look in Ken, see how pissed off Ken's getting.
Let me read.
Great for the rivalry, and it's absolutely great. Because Dave Portnoy is going to go out in the parking lot.
Well, now I'm thrown off.
And they're going to do the segment right there outside of the horseshoe.
Ross Dellinger writes, Ohio State did not ban Dave Portnoy. AD Ross Bjork tells Yahoo Sports. Bjork confirms that Fox decided Portnoy would not be on the main desk of Big Noon Kickoff. And those not on the desk do not normally appear on the field. These are Fox decisions, he emphasized.
With heavy influence from, let's be honest, Ohio State.
Conspiracy afoot.
Is without a doubt the show. I mean, Michigan is two. Ohio State's number one when it comes to Fox, this agreement, everything surrounding the Big Ten. Ohio State is
just
the leader.
Do like every other Michigan fan and get a job on the coaching staff and then, you know, buy a ticket on the secondary market.
Yeah, that's all he has to do. Then he can start filming and then disseminate it to the coaching staff. Then the coaching staff can pretend, we don't know where the information came from.
Is that the gimmick?
And then win a national championship
that
very year.
But is that the gimmick of what they could do? Could he all of a sudden be like, let's go to Dave Portnoy, who's now in Section 237. It's like, what?
I'm sure
they would. Is that what they're... Now, it would be... See, the reason I've liked Big Noon Kickoff is... I've matured a little bit, where I really did. Lee Corso is the godfather of college football on sports college football television. That aside, him aside, I think that game, it just became too, it just really became too, too bubbly, too, like, let's get this great. It's just too much. I really thought it was a child's program.
What, because they went to 3 hours?
And they had to fill it, and I like Tom Rinaldi, but once you got past the Tom Rinaldi make you cry stories, then it just became
and a story. Now on Fox.
This is cute, and that is cute, and this is cute, and that is cute. And I go, I'm done. So when I first saw Big Noon Kickoff, I go, here's serious guys giving me some football here before this game starts. I like this. Now, Dave Portnoy does entertain me, but if it does become this carnival sideshow, then I guess I'll just go away from it. Because, well, I don't get a lot of chances watching anyway because we got the whole, you know, youth football thing that I dare not speak of, or Lima's going to start texting my boss over. But other than that, I'd like to see some real breakdown of the games getting ready to be played later on today. Yes.
Look at your chat.
What? Oh, hold on.
We should mention it.
Oh, okay. For a second, I thought we had like hardcore breaking news here. Okay, no, okay.
But it is breaking news.
Browns are trading.
Wait a minute.
Breaking Browns news, hot. Sports Radio 92.3 The Fan.
The Browns trade. Cleveland is trading with the Rams for offensive tackle Leviston, KT Leviston, and giving up a seventh in 2028. 2028?
Hey, when you don't bring any of your starters with you and you fly into Cleveland and stay for 18 hours, sometimes you come away trading one of your guys back.
2028? Is this the NBA?
So,
all right.
So, again, Portnoy is entertaining to me. And I do think that if somehow they cobble together a segment where he's on the outside of the shoe or he's trying to tailgate with Michigan fans right around the Ohio State fans, I think that could be good.
That could be entertaining.
I think that could be entertaining.
That could be entertaining. But I like it dotted in a little bit. Like when Shane Gillis was on and he called him, what was it, Alabama Jones,
when he called
Nick Saban one Alabama Jones, and Nick Saban wasn't having it. I love that. Yeah. I thought that was great. If Dave Portnoy, I mean, if you take it over the top and it just becomes something ridiculous, well, then we're going to jump the shark, and then that's going to be the end of it. But I enjoy it, and my problem was, man, Tone, you put me in an impossible spot, because I'm not an Ohio State fan. I don't hate Ohio State, but I'm not an Ohio State fan anymore. I'm an observer of college football, and man, I was already to get past you trying to make me out to be some Michigan fan, which I'm not a Michigan fan at all. And I was ready to call Texas soft this week. And now I can't call Texas soft because one of the most annoying things that I ever find in college sports is how sensitive they get over the horns down thing. Now, you can't do that on television. And it's a 15-yard penalty if you do horns down in the end zone when you score on them. And they act like you just assaulted their grandmother and threw her down the stairs
because
you do
stuff.
Horns down. I love horns down.
Yeah, I think that's all part of what makes college football so much fun is that the fan bases can take it the extra mile. The alums, they truly hate each other.
I wanted Jeremiah Smith to score a 75-yard touchdown on the first drive and then go right there and do horns down right there in the end zone, and it would have been a great moment for everybody. And now Fox is apparently banning Dave Portnoy, even though...
Although it's interesting, you brought up Shane Gillis. He was at the desk when that happened. I'm pretty sure that was inside the stadium.
One of the great lines ever.
Yeah,
so he's not a Fox employee.
It made it even better than Nick Saban would not put it over and look like he was upset over
it. So Ohio State...
It contradicts what Ross Bjork said about Fox's policy.
Ohio State is a 2.5-point favorite against Texas in this game. I have no idea what to expect.
You think people are going to cry during Lee Corso's thing?
Well, I absolutely do, because there have been times when I've seen some of the hype videos, because it takes me back. It's not necessarily about Corso, who, you know, he's had a rough time. His health, he's been very public about his health, but yet wanting to be on that show. And despite how, you know, rough it's been for him physically, he's found a way to be on that show. And I think eventually him and his family came together and said, okay, it's time.
If you are saying...
And I can tell you that watching some of these homages to him, it takes me right back to college watching him do that. And yes, anything that is a throwback for nostalgia's sake, I mean, Kenny, listen to this when it comes to a potential tearjerker on Saturday noon.
No. It's been an incredible honor. and kids are privilege in for a funeral. To be with you, to be your partner for all these years. So pack the car and drive. There'll never be another Lee Corso. Thank you for everything you've done for me, for this show, for this sport. You're one of one.
I did not put that bet under that. That's from ESPN. That is what they are putting. They will show that on the big screen wherever they're doing game day, whatever parking lot they're in game day.
Everyone's
going to
cry.
And everyone is going to cry.
Now, Ken doesn't allow his kids to see him cry.
You're going to make me out to be a giant bastard. Okay, Kirk Herbstreit and the crew at Fox, the crew at ESPN will cry. Crew at Fox, if they cried, I mean, that made me different. But Kirk Herbstreit will get emotional, and the crew at ESPN that's been with him for a while will be emotional. 19-year-old students walking into the stadium are not going to get emotional.
Sure. That's not, I mean, is that their audience?
Yes, that's their audience.
That's game day's audience these days?
Every time I've turned on game day, you see a bunch of 19-year-old kids who are probably lubed up and they got the hard hats on and they're all lushed up.
Yeah, the students who always.
That's what you meant the audience was. I didn't know you were talking about that.
That's not who's really watching at home.
Well, then we got it.
The students are out drinking.
We got our signals crossed up because I thought you said that they were going to be people they're showing on TV and they're going to be like wiping away tears, and I go, 19-year-old drunken kids ain't gonna be wiping away. Allegedly,
I don't even know.
We don't condone such practices around here.
I think they get excited when Lee Corso puts the headgear on. Yeah, sure. It's what's shown.
There is no
at the stadium.
If you're Lee Corso, do you go? You know where I'm going with this.
I think he's going Texas.
Do you do it where it's like a wrestler? You go out looking at the lights, brother.
Yeah. I think
you go out on your back.
I think he wants the booze. I think he wants Herbie to go, what? What are you doing? Because remember,
he's going to put Brutus on and then rip it off.
Then rip it off.
Put Bebo on.
Right. And he'll let it marinate.
Yeah.
Because he's ever the showman. And the very first Brutus, the very first helmet gear was Brutus, famously, as they remind you each and every year.
Well, that was part of that clip. You didn't see it, but it's him putting it on.
The first Brutus?
Oh, yeah. The very first one.
I always loved when he put it on and then he does the kind of, you can't see his face, and he does the deadpan wave.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, bye-bye. Have a good day of college football. Talk to you next week. I always enjoyed that.
Well, he's done this. The best is West Virginia. I mean, the shooting the guns, which, of course, you cannot do.
Oklahoma, the Roughnecks.
Oklahoma, yep. Ohio State, he has picked to win, 32-14. With Ohio State. So he has picked them a bunch of times. Texas is further down, 10-8 in his Texas selections.
I can't believe somebody has the records. That's incredible.
Oh, he's 287 correct picks, 142 incorrect picks. Winning percentage, remember, he's not doing the spread, 67%.
That's better than him as a head coach. I'm not trying to be mean-spirited. I'm just saying. He was coaching in Indiana. It's better than him as a head coach. I think it was the Tampa Bay Bandits, too, in the USFL. I'm not going to be there. We're a home game, so I could see it. I'm not going to go see it. I don't want to go out of my way to get emotional.
This one I will. You know what? I haven't watched him a lot in recent years, and I'll be honest, it's been a tough watch, unfortunately. You know, you see somebody up there in age still trying to do what he's always wanted to do and gutting it out. Quite frankly, I have no idea how he's been able to do it. But he has been up there. He's had his family up there at times. And so that's what it's going to do. It's going to be the last time, for nostalgia's sake, that it'll be a throwback to, young me in college, where I was watching. I can tell you, I definitely was watching, and I was there. I went one time and was like, probably never
again.
But it was cool one time to go see it.
Man, we used to get done. It was the best. You'd have football on Friday night, and then you'd go in and watch film, and he would have you go in and watch film at like 7 a.m. because he didn't want you assing off on Friday night. So you were in film and getting in the pool, because Perry had a pool. Still do. Congratulations on all our success. You get in the pool. Even if you... those three plays that went out there on field goal really took it out of me. I got to go get my work in. But then we'd like me, my buddy Jake, my buddy Ronnie, Beaver, like a lot of... Like, we were like, well, we're going to go over to Jake's house. We're going to watch... there was always like that perfect Saturday where it was like overcast. And it was just like, you're going to get your Saturday started. This is going to end. It's going to end at 3 a.m. on Sunday night. I don't condone such practices. It's going to end on 3 a.m. on Sunday morning, I should say. I don't know at whose house I'm going to be at, but it starts at Saturday at 10:30 watching the end of College game day with my buddies and then watching college football until it's time to go out or go to a party. And it was always a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And ever since I started doing this and in my college, there was a little bit of it. But, you know, once you started doing like radio and started working games and stuff like that, I was driving. So I have not seen the show regularly except for like tuning in here and there or when I was doing the Saturday CBS show. Like, I didn't see it really for the last 20-something years now, or for the most part for the last 18, 19 years now. But it is a tradition. It is a tradition. I checked out Big Noon Kickoff when that first came out. I've enjoyed Big Noon Kickoff. If I'm picking two, I'm picking Big Noon Kickoff. But it is a tradition, and he was very entertaining by it, and he was entertaining by it for a long time. I just don't want to tune in because I don't want to feel sad. I always feel sad for those things, and I don't want to feel sad.
Well, it's definitely an era-ending moment,
yeah.
And you get these sometimes in life, whatever
it
is.
That's the second I thought. When they brought Pat McAfee out, that's the first thing I thought. I was, oh, he's the new Lee Corso.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I'm just trying to think. When I was young, Cheers, that final episode of Cheers. That was always one I'll remember. Roseanne, the final episode. Like, you have these times where you're like, that's it. Things have changed forever. And I think this is one of those moments in TV.
Trying to remember the final episode of Roseanne, because didn't the final season got off the
whole
rails?
The season was,
yeah, because she thought that Dan had actually died.
Dan was gone.
Yeah, he put a hole in the wall, and it got really emotional.
I was on the campus of Oklahoma State in a dorm watching Final Seinfeld.
I got a controversial take. I actually like the final episode of Seinfeld. The ending and how it ended.
Yeah,
I thought it was a nice way. I thought it was cute. It's the only time I'll use that word in my life.
Thanks to Bailey Zappi official.
Yeah, Bailey Zappi's official.
Super Bowl.
No, shut up. No.
Super Browns.
No. Yeah. I'm not participating.
You've been
in
zapping.
It.